Hi, I'm Perry, and this is Chemist Corner. Hello, and welcome to Chemist Corner, the program dedicated to helping you become a better creator of cosmetic products. I'm Perry Romanowski. This is day 26 of our series, 30 Days to Become a Better Cosmetic Chemist. In today's program, we're going to discuss raw material samples, including how to get them, when you should get them, and what to do with them after you get them. Let's begin with how you get samples. Sometimes they come to you. If you work as a scientist at an established cosmetic company, you will eventually get a call or otherwise be contacted from a raw material salesperson. You are a potential customer for their ingredient, and striking up relationships with potential customers is one of their main parts of their job. You actually help them complete their business objectives by meeting with them and even going out to lunch with them. These meetings can be one of the perks of being a formulator. But simply having a meeting is only the beginning. A raw material salesperson's ultimate goal is to get you to use their ingredient in your formula. They hope this will eventually lead to your company making a large purchase of their raw material. And if your product is successful, they stand to make a number of subsequent sales for years. For this reason, a salesperson will typically steer your casual business meeting into a discussion about their raw material, and eventually they will either ask you if you want one or offer you a free sample so that you can try it in your formulas. Most of the time, you will be compelled to accept the free sample even if you can't immediately think of some place to use it. This is one of the main ways that people get samples. But sometimes you have to seek out the samples yourself. Often, during your formulation work, you find materials that you want to try in your formulas. You may read about materials in a trade journal or about something online or see it in a trade show. Trade shows are a great source for samples. In some cases, the raw material suppliers bring samples to the show and hand them out to anyone who wants them. Or they take your card and send you a sample later. This reminds me of a pro tip. When going to trade shows, bring lots of business cards. The suppliers at the show collect them, use them for sample requests, and give out prizes. You help them when you give them your card. Another source of samples is using an online source like prospector.com or going directly through a company's websites. Typically, you put in your contact information and in a few weeks, they'll send you a sample. If you work for a big company or even a known company in the cosmetic industry, you can usually get these samples for free. If you work as an independent chemist or a small entrepreneur, you might have to pay for the samples. Usually you can get a small amount like 4 or 8 ounces, which is great for lab work. I should mention for chemists who might be working out of home labs, chemical raw material companies will not send you samples to a home address. So if you want to get a sample, it will have to be delivered to a business address. So that's how you get samples to work with. Next, you'll need a plan of what to do with these samples once you get them. There have been many times when a sample shows up in the mail and I have no idea why I even ordered it. Lots of times there wasn't any paperwork about the sample either, except for the material safety data sheet, of course. Before you even order a sample, it makes sense to write down why you wanted the ingredient or what it's supposed to do. At the very least, write down what type of material it is, for example, a surfactant, solubilizer, conditioning agent, or something like that. That way, when you get the sample a few weeks later, you'll at least have some clue as to why you got it. In most cosmetic companies, you'll be swamped with projects and evaluating new raw materials won't be high on your list of priorities. If you don't write down why you got a material, you won't know what to do with it once you get it. The more detailed information you can record about the material will make it more likely you'll use it when you have time. Here are some basic things you should ask the supplier about any material you order. Finding answers to these questions will also help reduce the number of samples you get, since storage of samples can be a problem in some labs. First, ask what applications the ingredient is for. Finding out what type of material it is can help you figure out if you have a use for it. Is it a surfactant, an emulsifier, an active ingredient, etc.? Next, ask what studies have been done and what data shows. Suppliers are in the business of selling ingredients and are not going to show negative data collected, but you'll want them to show you at least some positive data. Just be careful that the data you get will be biased. You should know that. Suppliers' data isn't bad for sparking your interest in a material, but you can't rely on suppliers to give you claim support for your products. Remember, claim support is the responsibility of the cosmetic company. Another question to ask is about recommended use levels. This is a practical inquiry for a variety of reasons. It will help you determine if the use level and costs are within the confines of your budget. For example, if a study was performed at a 5% use level, it may or may not be feasible to use it at that level. Again, suppliers are in the business to sell ingredients, so be wary of exceptionally high use levels. Other questions you can ask are formulating questions. For example, ask what the pH range is that it can be used stably. If you formulate products that typically have a high pH, an ingredient optimal at a low pH will not work for you. Find out what it's soluble in. You need to know if the ingredient type is compatible with the rest of the ingredients in your formulas. Also ask if there are any known incompatibilities with the ingredient. This may save you from formulation problems in the future. For instance, if you're making a shampoo, it's helpful to know whether the ingredient is compatible with anionic surfactants. By collecting this early information before you get ingredients, you'll be in better shape to use the ingredients once the samples arrive. Next, we'll turn our attention to what to do with raw material samples when you do get them. When you receive a raw material sample, it is helpful to have a system of tracking and storing them. Most chemists have a section of their lab where they randomly put samples they intend to evaluate when they have a chance. Unfortunately, what usually happens is the material gets pushed to the back, ignored for a time, and then by the time it's looked at again, the chemist can't really remember why it was even ordered. To overcome this problem, keep a written or digital log of all the samples you receive. Record the date when you get them and a little reminder of why you were going to evaluate it. You know, you could either put the brand you were going to work on for this ingredient or the type of formula you were going to make. That way, when you are going through your samples on cleanup day, you can remind yourself of why you wanted the sample in the first place. Actually, one of the things I would often do is when I had the sample, I would just take a post-it note. I would write on there why I was interested in the sample and when I got it, and then I would stick that right on the sample. And then when it was time to clean out my shelves, I could at least look at that post-it note, and that reminded me of why I wanted the sample. At this point, it makes sense to tell you the strategy I used to evaluate many raw materials with minimal effort. Instead of having a supplier send you a raw material which you have to incorporate into a formula and evaluate, ask them to send you the raw material in a finished product. If the ingredient is supposed to go in a hair product, ask for a shampoo or a conditioner. If it is a skin ingredient, ask for a basic lotion. Additionally, you should ask them to send a sample of the formula with and without the ingredient. Don't put any restriction on the composition of the formula except for having one sample with the ingredient and one without. That way, you can determine if you should move forward with your own formulation efforts. If you can't find any differences in the formula that they send you with and without, it really makes no sense to continue to look at the raw material. You got to figure they're going to put their best foot forward and they're going to show their ingredient in the best light. And so if in the best light possible, you don't see any differences, it's not worth your time to continue looking at the ingredient. Of course, unless you are a big customer, your supplier may not want to give you a formulated sample, as I suggested. In this case, you'll have to evaluate the ingredient in your own systems. You'll eventually have to do this anyway, but testing the ingredient in a system the supplier has put together is really a great time saver. To evaluate the ingredient yourself, one way to save time is by evaluating it from a finished base formula. This is the same thing you ask the supplier to do, except you have to create the samples yourself. Or if you're a big shot formulator, you have your technician do it, of course. To get the most useful information, you'll want to have some standard base formulas that you always use. A base formula is just basic formulations like a shampoo, a body wash, conditioner, gel, lotion, that has a minimum amount of ingredients needed to make it a viable product. You may also use your current formula, say without fragrance or color, as your base. This has the added advantage of letting you see exactly how a new raw material will affect your current formula. I always had a gallon or two of like VO5 shampoo, whenever I wanted to test a formula that was the shampoo I was working on, I would just take that base formula, put in the raw material, and just evaluate it based on my own experience. So whenever I had time to test new raw materials, I had an easy and quick way to do that. When you're testing a new ingredient, use it at the highest level suggested by the supplier. Suppliers typically overestimate the amount you need since they have an incentive to get you to use more, but it still makes sense to use their suggestion as a starting point. If you do not see a benefit using the highest amount suggested, it's unlikely you see any benefit at all. And if you see a positive benefit, you can always cut back on the ingredient in future prototypes. To make your prototype, just take a sample of your base formula and add the appropriate percentage of the new raw material. So if the supplier tells you that the suggested level for the new raw material is 5%, just take 95 grams of your base formula and add 5 grams of the new raw material. You may also just take 100 grams of the base formula and add 5 grams, but that will actually result in the new raw material being at a slightly lower percent than you intended. Either way, the number is going to be slightly off, so it doesn't actually matter that much. If the ingredient requires you to melt it or use some heat to help it get into solution, then feel free to warm up your base and incorporate the new raw material at a higher temperature. When you do this, you might want to consider adding back some liquid preservative as you cool down. However, if you are going to evaluate the product soon after you make it, the sample, this additional preservative is probably not necessary for this early stage evaluation. Remember, these are just crude prototypes for the purposes of a quick screen evaluation. While you are making your prototypes, be sure to record information about using the ingredients. For example, note any color or texture changes to the formula after you put it in. Also, record how long it takes for the ingredient to get thoroughly blended. This information will be helpful when you're writing production procedures if you do end up using the material. After you've made your sample, take the standard specification readings to see how the ingredient affects characteristics like viscosity, pH, color, and odor. Again, this information will be helpful to use in the future. The next step is to evaluate the performance of the new raw material. How you test this will depend on the type of ingredient and the type of product you are evaluating. For hair products, you can see how the ingredient affects foam, feel on the hair, rinseability, combing, or any other property of hair products that you typically measure. For skin products, you can measure things like feel on the skin, time it takes to rub in, stickiness, moisturizing effect, and, you know, anything else that you test. You should run any standard tests that you typically run on your formula. I also suggest using the product yourself to see if you notice any difference. The key to evaluating a new raw material is to notice differences. If you do not notice any differences, there really is no reason to pursue the raw material in the future. A case could be made that if the result takes a while to manifest itself, like over a couple of weeks, you could be missing those effects. And that really is true. However, we're looking for really dramatic effects, and consumers don't notice dramatic effects if it's going to take 2 or 3 weeks to have that effect. Another point about conducting these evaluations: make sure you do them in a blinded, controlled fashion. This means that you should always test the prototype with the new raw material versus the prototype without the raw material. And the person who is conducting the test should not know which sample is the test and which is the control. When I was conducting extensive tests on raw materials, I had another chemist create the sample and even do a coding system. It was only after I made measurements or recorded my impression that I found out which sample was which. I also made use of a triangle test in which I would evaluate 3 samples, 2 of which were the same, either 2 test or 2 control samples, and 1 that was different. The goal of this type of testing is to see if you can figure out which sample is the odd one out. If you could, then that suggested further testing of the material was warranted. But if you can't, you pretty much can cease further testing. It's extremely important for you to do this testing in a blinded fashion. Remember, you are biased to find some differences, and it's easy to notice differences that do not actually exist. Remember, it's very easy to fool ourselves. Only through blinding can we minimize inherent biases. As I said, the testing you do will depend on the material and the product type, but the main thing you want to focus on are tests that measure whether your new raw material results in some consumer perceptible difference. If you can make a consumer perceptible difference in your formula, then you really have an innovation. Unless you are evaluating material for a cost savings project, a consumer perceptible change is the most important thing to find. Of course, it's difficult to find real consumer perceptible differences. There just aren't that many technologies that make the kind of impact. But even if the material doesn't have a perceptible difference, it can still lead to an impressive new claims if you can show a measurable difference. This can be done using standard lab tests. For all of your formulas, you should have standard lab tests that are run to determine performance. When evaluating a new raw material, run the new prototype through these standard tests. If you can show a statistically significant difference, then you might have an innovative new formula. It's not as impressive as a consumer perceptible difference, but it can still lead to a breakthrough innovation, at least with claims. Most raw materials are not going to have a significant impact, and you might be tempted to just abandon work on them. That's probably a good idea, but don't forget to record the results on your evaluation. I'd like to keep a spreadsheet of all the new raw materials that I evaluated, noting what I did and what the results were. That way I could remember what I tested so I didn't repeat myself, and I had a database of my efforts that could be helpful to someone else in the company. I'll put a link to an old spreadsheet of mine that I did in the show notes. Also, this made it easier to report back to the supplier about how my evaluations went. While you are under no obligation to tell details of your evaluation to your suppliers, it is a good thing to do. First, it shows them that you are sincere about sample requests, which will make it more helpful in the future. Plus, they might be able to point out some flaw in the way you evaluated the ingredient, or give you some suggestions on something else to try. You're also helping them with information that they can take back to their lab and use when they're creating future new raw materials. The system of raw material evaluation I've outlined in this episode is really more of a screening system. It's also not a perfect system, as it may screen out some materials that are great even though you couldn't notice any real differences. But with dozens of new raw materials launched every year, it's very difficult to do extensive testing on everything. You need some method for screening out only the most promising things. Finally, don't ever stop testing. You will never create that truly innovative new product if you don't continue to screen every new raw material that you hear about. And don't rely on what suppliers tell you their materials can do. There might be something a raw material does in a formula which you don't know about or which the supplier doesn't know about. Keep testing, and if you do it in a systematic way, you'll increase your chances of finding something truly innovative and different.
Today's challenge.
Today's challenge is to get started with your own raw material evaluation system. To do this, you'll need a couple of things. First, you need to identify and make your base formula. This will be the product that you use to evaluate all your new raw materials. I found shampoo or body wash formulas were great for testing new raw materials. An unneutralized gel formula with carbomer can also be a good starting base for styling products. To thicken the formula, you simply add the neutralizer after adding the new raw material. And standard conditioner formula is also nice for doing a quick evaluations, but this typically requires heating to ensure that the ingredient is properly incorporated. Since many of you work on skincare products, you can also make a lotion-based formula, but this usually requires heating to incorporate any new ingredient. This can result in stability problems, so you'll need to evaluate these formulas soon after you make them. In addition to your standard-based formula, you'll also want to create a list of new raw materials to try. Go through and create a spreadsheet listing all of the new raw materials that you want to try. I'll share an example of the spreadsheet in the show notes that you can download and use for yourself as a template. To populate the spreadsheet, you simply have to start recording materials that you'll want to try. To find new raw materials, go to a website like prospector.com and search for functional materials that look interesting. And once you have your spreadsheet, start ordering samples for future evaluation. Having a system to evaluate new raw materials is the best way to create innovative new products that have consumer perceptible effects. When you start your own system, you'll be well on your way to becoming a better cosmetic chemist. Well, that's today's program. Thanks so much for listening. On tomorrow's program, we are going to talk about formulating and focus on how to find the cost of a formula and how to make it less expensive without sacrificing quality. If you have found this series helpful, please go to the comments section in the show notes and leave a comment. Also, please share it with your friends and colleagues or anyone else you think will be interested. As always, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes or any other podcast playing service that you happen to be using. And please, if you can, leave us a review on iTunes. This will help other people find the show. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're at Chemist's Corner. And like us on Facebook. Additionally, we have a cosmetic science forum, and I encourage you to join that and participate in discussions about cosmetic formulating. You can get lots of questions answered from cosmetic chemists from around the world. Just go to chemistscorner.com/cosmeticsciencetalk. Thanks again for listening. I'm Perry Romanowski. Now, go make a difference.